Hello, welcome to Between Two Worlds podcast. My name's Luke. I'll be hosting. Dan is back.
I am back.
Dan, where were you?
Wiser.
I was more mature. I was in Kelowna last week.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm doing a master's program through Briarcrest Seminary out of Saskatchewan. And it's part of my schooling. So I head up to Kelowna a few times over a couple of years, come back, write about 50 pages of papers. Mm. Actually, that's incorrect. It's more. So it's actually more, yeah, when I think about it, yeah, how much I did last time. So yeah, write a ton of papers, which is awesome, and then head back up in a couple of months for another week-long intensive. So yeah, just sitting with another group of people in ministry and just engaging in youth and youth and family ministry.
Yeah, and yeah. You're about halfway done your first year-ish?
I've been up twice. I go for two more times. Yeah, so
okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So gain your master's.
Yep. It's good. Wow. It's really good being surrounded by a group of people mm-hmm. who are actively involved in ministry from across Western Canada.
You're in a cohort, right?
Yeah, in a cohort. So out of the whole classroom, we're divided into smaller cohorts. So I'm in a cohort with four other people who are doing the master's level program.
Where are they from?
There is one person from Center Street Church. Yep. Right. And then we have one person who, Luke, I'm gone. I've lost it. You're back. I'm back. Okay. Sorry. I have a person who is responsible for a Young Life ministry mm-hmm. within the Kelowna area. And then one lady who is running the youth ministry at a church in Kelowna.
Oh, nice.
So who has had many, many, many years of experience.
Cool.
So, yeah. It's a really good group just to bounce off ideas.
Is it good to kind of separate ministry and dive right into, you know, a week long?
I think it's good. I mean, the first week when we were away in October there, it's more just kind of getting to know everyone because you're supposed to be engaging in conversation. It's supposed to be interactive with the instructor. So the first week was really like, okay, where's everyone coming from? Who's going to talk more?
Yep.
I apologize for that.
Yes, you did.
And then this past week was really fruitful.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, that's good. Really fruitful.
Have you found anybody just like you?
Ooh. No, because here's the thing. If you don't know me, if you just hear me and you go, oh, I wonder what this guy looks like. I am 52 years old. I have a family, you know, I'm a granddad and so like that. I have a beautiful head of silver gray hair.
Yes.
Silver fox.
Yeah. So people look at me and they go, man, that dude is just like,
sideburns.
He's full of wisdom. Like he's full of, he's so mature. Mm. And then they go, when we're dealing about risk management, they go, share one experience that did it.
One.
So I'm going, oh, which one should I pick? Yeah. And so then I shared it, and everyone, there was alternately laughing and just shocked expressions at me. So it's, yeah.
So what you're saying is our insurance provider should not be listening to this?
Well, I'm not saying what we did here on air. Not at all. But but it was good. So.
And of course, we have Ron here.
Yep. Yes. Good to be here.
Thank you.
Well, thought I'd say that.
We're going to get started with Here's the Thing. And Ron is up again. Ron's just on a roll.
Yeah, I'm
so
on a roll.
Here we go.
I made a list, actually, that would help me kind of think about what I could actually say that could contribute to many people's
lives. How many
lives.
More do you have left right now?
I have a few left.
It's a manifesto.
It is. But here's the thing. This has bothered me for years. This is no word of a lie on this. I have trouble with public washroom, bathroom dispensers.
No, like pub?
The paper towel.
Public?
You know, like the public ones. You know, like, I mean, we don't have those in our private washrooms. But, you know, when you go to the airport, you go to a Coliseum, you go to a church.
The Coliseum.
Everything that, you know, to watch a sporting event, come to church, and you use a public washroom. All these paper towel dispensers are different. You almost have to have a set of instructions to say, you know, because some you put your hand underneath there, it's motion sensored, out it comes. Hmm. Others have a crank that you can actually see the crank. And then some of the times the cranks are hidden and it's just these little flip knobs that you, some have push bars, you know, you can push bar thing down. all over the place. Why is it that there are so many different kinds of these paper towel dispensers? Is it just a way to make money? They reinvent this stuff so that, you know, churches like ours, or are they, oh, you have to have the newest and latest paper towel dispenser. Mm-hmm. And away they go. The money going down the drain. And
are you thinking there's possibly like some sort of conspiracy involved here?
I would say that there is conspiracy. I know there is, because whatever, I mean, what is wrong with a crank? Why do we have to have battery powered
motion sensor? You don't like the motion center.
Why?
Oh,
germs.
You don't want, you want motion sensor, dude.
You wash your hands.
Yeah, and then you don't want to touch a dirty crank.
Well, the hands should be clean every time you touch the crank. You wash your hands, crank it.
Okay, I'm going to be honest too, that I have expressed frustration here when because you automatically put your hands over the sensor.
Nothing happens.
And then nothing happens.
Yep.
Right? So the other day I was in the washroom with my son at an airport or somewhere like that. And he was standing with his hands underneath the faucet, just standing there, and nothing's happening. And I look over and I go, "What are you doing?" He goes, "I'm washing my hands." I go, "You got to turn the knob on." Because he was so used to the sensors too on the sink. He's literally just standing there. It's like, dude,
there's an issue here. And I know that part of this is to, you know, use less paper, all that kind of thing. That's why the sensor comes in, and, you know, about 3.5 inches of paper comes. And so you got to do like 8 times and wait for, you know, because I got big hands. You know, you got big hands, more paper.
Hmm.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
So it bothers me that you walk into all these places and there's different kinds everywhere, and I'm
if you were to do it over again, what would you do?
Uniformity.
Well, which one would you have?
Which one? I like, you know, the bar one. To me, the bar one makes sense because you see the action. I mean, I like, maybe I, you know, it's kind of like you know, opening a door. You know, you open it. You got an action. Push the bar, you got an action. Push it once, twice, three times, push, and it just keeps giving you what you need. You know, so that's my favorite.
The push bar.
Push bar.
Hmm. Interesting. Thank you for that riveting. Here's the thing.
Oh, it's off my chest, and I'm feeling good about that now.
That's good. Today on the podcast, we are going to be talking about SSA, same-sex attraction. And so this is not a newer topic, but it is a topic that needs to be discussed for in the family household. And we're getting our inspiration. There's lots of good websites that do a lot of good articles and good things to say on same-sex attraction. So we're going to talk about that for the remainder of the podcast. So, Ron, Dan, what do parents need to know about same-sex attraction? What do they need to know about how to talk to their kids about this? When do they talk to their kids about this? Do they have to talk to their kids about this? I want to hear you guys' thoughts. Anybody have?
Yeah, so, okay, you threw it. What do you want to address first there?
Should this be a conversation parents have with kids?
Sure. I mean, it needs to be a conversation, especially depending upon what school they're going into.
Mm-hmm.
Their age, all of those things. Yeah. I would, you know, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that. I mean, it's same-sex attraction is not that's a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are many, there's been a lot of studies that have gone on is that it is quite normal for a growing child that is entering into puberty that will experiment with being a boy or girl. Just what's it like to be a boy or girl? Because they've grown up knowing the body parts that they've been
not
given.
Not only that, but to also be confused about who they like.
Exactly. Yeah, totally right. And those kind of things. So I think it's normal for us in our society to recognize that this is part of developmental growth, that it's not unusual for, you know, there to be discussions and thoughts about this and that kind of thing. So if it comes into your family and you don't have any idea how to do a conversation on this, that's difficult, you know, and I think that's important.
Yeah, because the importance of having a conversation for this if you don't, someone else will with your kid at some point if you aren't the one who's leading this discussion. They're going to hear it from either their friends or their teachers or from popular culture, all this stuff. They will be told about same-sex attraction at some time. And if parents, you yourselves, have not read up or processed this yourselves with the kids, they will hear this. Mm-hmm. And so this needs to be a huge push for parents to be like, hey, you have to actually start a conversation with this. I feel like that's where a lot of our podcast ends, like talk to your kids. And this is one of the topics that you should be talking to your kids about. So yeah. You guys have any?
And for me, I would say that early on, you know, as a parent, you have, you know, depending on what God has given you in terms of children, boys and girls, just boys, just girls, all those kinds of things. But to notice and understand if you've got a mixture of boys and girls early on, that there's a difference between boys and girls, not just on their body parts, but in how they live and how they interact. You know, boys are different than girls. Girls are different than boys. And we now live in a culture that, you know, it's almost like it's wrong for us to define them early and to describe them. No, we can't define them. And there's this couple in Toronto that had, they birthed a child and they refused to put male or female on the birth certificate because they want their child to discover that all by themselves, not by looking, oh, you put an M because I'm a boy, you know, that kind of thing. And so there's that whole controversy there. But speaking to parents here, I think what you have to recognize that the differences between boys and girls, boys get their sense of self-achievement. They're wired to be self-reliant. You know, they want to figure me do it. You know, I remember you, Luke, growing up, and when I was teaching you how to do things, I mean, you and Coach, let me do it, you know? And whereas girls are more relationally driven, you know, they get a lot of sense of security from relationships. They do. They're multitaskers. They can do a lot of things, you know, at one time, so to speak, you know? So there's a difference there. Boys are more linear in their thinking. They're focused. When I'd say, okay, we're going to play soccer, boom. You know what that's all about. You're going to play football, boom. You know what it means to get ready. Girls can be distracted, or they can have multiple things that will get them to that same place. But there's a difference there, you know?
But what if there's guys who are displaying girl tendencies or girls displaying guy tendencies? Like that, I feel like for so long there was boxes that boys and girls got put in. Mm-hmm. So the classic boys wear blue, boys play the trucks, all this kind of stuff. Yep. And then I feel like as a culture we finally got away from that, where it's just like, hey, if you're a boy and you like to draw, that's great. Mm-hmm. If you're a girl who likes to play sports and get dirty, that's fine. That doesn't make you not a girl. Like, there's no that box. But then all of a sudden, over the past couple of years, it's like we brought the boxes back and we've redefined it as like, oh, if you're a girl and you like to play with trucks, that means you're a boy. Mm-hmm. But that's just
not... Yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, and so I think... I don't know if like putting the how a boy should be in a box. That's why this book came out called Wild at Heart by, I think it's John Eldridge.
Eldridge.
And some boys read it and they're like, I don't feel this. Does this mean I'm not going to be a man?
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I also think from childhood on, it is our job as parents to encourage what it means to be a boy, what it means to be a girl.
Yeah, I think there are distinct things that means, if we're like, what is it for a boy to become a man, for a boy to be a boy? What is that? Like, there's some intrinsic things that don't change, right? But like the stereotypes, I think, is what we've gotten wrong. But there are certain parts that are intrinsic value that God has written in us, that he says in the word, in the Bible, that men or women are supposed to be.
Yeah, and I think that's because God has created defined roles for men and women, for husband and for wife. And so when kids see that role modeled, I mean, I think it's very important for parents to recognize that my kids are watching me. Okay, what does dad do? What does mom do? What is mom good at? What is dad good at? You know, And so when we look at it biblically speaking, if our homes resemble the spiritual leader, you know, the father, and the defined roles there, I think that's a pathway that it needs to go on. That's just one of the things that I would recommend. Yeah.
One of the reasons why we're doing this is there's a website called Living Out. I think one of the main contributors is Sam Alberry. He came to the Apologetics Conference, I think, last year, and he wrote an article saying, "How should I respond if my child comes out to me?" And it's a really good article. I'll put it in the below about how parents should react if their child is going through this kind of, okay, do I like boys? Do I like girls? Who do I like? And it says just some really good things. Like one of them says, love and accept them unconditionally.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
100%.
Listen and ask lots of open questions. Normalize it. Point them to good support, but don't avoid supporting them yourselves, which is key. Take it seriously. Don't deny it, but don't blow it out of proportion. Don't speculate about causes. Yeah, there's just lots of good. So I'll put this article below. And it's good. So Rondan, do you guys have anything to say?
Well,
on
I think especially in regards to that article is, as a parent, if we're sitting there, and I mean, the majority of people listening to this podcast are people that have been raised in the church and they're raising their kids in the church. Mm-hmm. They're raising their kids with, a biblical worldview, an understanding, of what male and female is, as defined scripturally. And then our son or daughter sits down in front of us and says, like if it's our son and says, you know, I believe I'm attracted to men, or or I think I'm a woman. And I understand that your first reaction could quite be panic,
right?
Or fear, because you don't know what you are going to do here. And often that can come out then, because any situation where we are caught unaware and we're not prepared for it, it can come out in anger.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And our immediate response could be in an anger-filled tone, no, you're not.
Yeah.
And depending upon our relationship with our child, we could then get up and walk away from the table and think to ourselves, well, I've dealt with that.
Mm.
So that is not what we want to do.
Hmm.
We want to be entering. Now, this depends now upon the age of your child who is coming to you.
Right.
Because a lot of this comes back to some really, really deep questions of philosophy and about life.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of these decisions, for example, where a child may decide, I'm a woman now, a guy might decide, I'm a woman, because I feel like it, is based upon a subjective understanding of reality, because I decided it's true.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. So often depending upon the age of your child, this could be you're trying to engage them in a conversation, you know, about theology, right? About philosophy of life. And it could be, they're just like, no, I want to be, the school says I can be.
Mm-hmm.
So the best thing to do is you want to enter into the conversation there.
Right.
You're not, if your child comes to you and says, if he's a boy and says, I'm a girl, your first thing is not going to be thinking of all the TLC shows and go, well, I guess I'm going to have to get some surgery lined up here. Mm-hmm. That is not what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. This is a great situation for conversation. I remember talking to a camp director one time where they had a girl who was in cabin, and the girl, in the midst of the week, said that they were gay, and you know, and they're, and the camp directors, they had a great conversation and said why oh okay, so you know, let's talk about that. And so it came to the point where the girl said, well, yeah, I don't really have any other friends, but this one girl, she's being really friendly to me, so I guess I'm gay. So depend, right? So you want to be entering into the conversation. You don't want to blow it. You don't want to blow it out of proportion. Yeah.
You have to know what they mean by what they say.
Yes.
Right.
Right. And you have to realize that the culture, the environment that they're living in,
mm-hmm.
When they step out of your house, this is the situation. If you feel it, mm-hmm. do it. If you feel it, you it must be so. Mm-hmm. So they're taking a subjective reality, and it's automatically being formed as an objective, mm-hmm. as an objective reality.
Yeah.
So I mean, and that's the thing. Conversely, you don't want to throw back to them and go, "Well, I feel like a sheep, ergo I must be a sheep." Mm-hmm. Saying something like that immediately to them is not going to. They're going to be like, "No, that's stupid, Dad." Right. But the thing is, that's a subjective reality. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, and so we want to be really, really sensitive when we're entering into a conversation. Right. But this website, like you said, Luke, this website that you've thrown up there is a really good website to take a look at and to read through. And you don't have to agree with everything on the website.
No.
Same with any other resources you see. You do not have to accept them verbatim.
And you don't have to exactly implement them into your family away.
No.
I mean, and to remember that the whole area of same-sex attraction, homosexuality, all those kind of things is a very complex issue. I mean, there are no pat answers to any and all of this. No. And I think that sometimes we look for that, you know, even as a parent, you know, like you said, Dan, our reaction is, no, you are not. End of discussion, go to your room, you know, that kind of thing. Well, that's not helpful for anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, that might make us feel good for a nanosecond, but then we are also left feeling very empty and very much unaware of where is my kid coming from.
Yeah.
And so that's why we do need to have, you know, that opportunity to interact and to keep the conversation lines open and say, okay, what do you mean by this? And I think I often, you know, when depending on how old your kids are or the conversations you've had around same-sex attraction and things like that, there's this thing that I call emotional truth. We want something desperately to be true. Yeah. Tell me that this is right because I love God and God loves me. How could this be wrong? Hmm. You know, and I've had conversations on this and I've prayed and asked God and God never said it was wrong. You know, in fact, how could I experience so much love and acceptance, you know, if this is wrong, you know, all those kind of things. And so, I mean, we could throw that right into the other areas. I mean, we think homosexuality is the only sexual sin there is. Well, no, premarital sex, extramarital affairs. You know, I've heard all those excuses. Well, it feels so right, you know. Yeah. And I love this person. Yeah. And, you know, this is the first time anybody's ever loved me. You know, all those kind of things. So we can emotionalize everything. And when the emotions are riding, it can become truth. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to be careful of. What are we actually anchoring
in? Yeah, sorry, Ron. Yeah, and as a Christian parent, we have to realize that we are not defined by and what we've been teaching our kids and raising our kids. We're not defined by our feelings or by our gender or by our sexual attraction.
Right.
We are defined by who we are in Christ. That is our identity. And so, as a Christian parent, we actually have. We have a real advantage for having a conversation like that because that is our starting point, right? With the, you know, that could be, I mean, that's a huge starting point for our conversations with our youth. So that's a lot. When you think about how many parents would have these conversations with their youth in this particular day and age, as a Christian, as someone of faith, as someone who lives in that reality of who we are redeemed in Christ, we are in a lot better position to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, if you don't know that reality, what this culture is teaching is you are identified by who, you know, by your gender, by who you identify as.
Yep.
That is your reality. That is your identity.
That's your worth.
That is your worth, right? So, and the big thing is, and of course, then of course, you know, that gender is fluid. Mm-hmm. So, you figure what that's like for an adolescent. Who is being told that you can be defined by your gender, but your gender is also fluid. You can change your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So you figure you take a teenager whose hormones are flying all over developmentally, intellectually, spiritually. They are all over the place and being told you can be defined by this, but then you can change it again. I mean, I don't think I would get out of bed in the morning. I would be like so overwhelmed. I wouldn't be able to make up a decision. What's happening today? Where am I today? Who am I going to like today? What's going on? What if this person looks at me? Am I going to like them now? It's overwhelming. It's overwhelming.
Yeah. There's a, speaking of like that, and to go back a little bit, what Dan was saying, there's an article on Desiring God called Longing for Intimacy. It's about a pastor who displays same-sex attraction. He's a husband. He has kids. But he says he still has attraction to the same sex. And he says this. I'm going to post this article as well. The Bible, however, does not teach I feel, therefore I am, what you're talking about, Dan. Mm-hmm. But rather, I feel, therefore I need. As a result of the fall of our hearts are out of order and dark. Instead of loving light and hating darkness, we love darkness and hate light. And as we fall more in love with darkness, we sin and choose the way of death. And so, I mean, that's our culture, though, is like we love the darkness and we say, like, I feel, therefore that must be what I am. And since what you were saying, Dan, with we give so much worth and so much value and that's what you are, as soon as, like, okay, we give so much worth to our sexuality that that becomes who you are. And if you reject, so if I reject your sexuality, Dan, that means I'm rejecting you as a person, mm-hmm. being like, I hate you. I hate what you are. When we've given so much worth to the actual sexuality of someone, which I think is wrong, and we've done that through romance movies, being like at the end, every single end of a movie, there has to be someone who falls in love. That's the main point of all the movie, is getting your love. Mm-hmm. And we've put that as number one. So then when there's someone who is struggling with, do they like boys? Do they like girls? And they're like, okay, I guess I'm a boy who likes boys. And then we're telling them, no, you cannot. You're denying them the one thing in this life that they thought was a guarantee that they would find love in this world. And you're telling them no. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so dealing with this conversation of sexual identity, of same-sex attraction, it's huge because our culture has infiltrated all of our minds thinking that romantic love is the greatest thing on this earth. Mm-hmm. It's portrayed in every movie. That there's love somehow. Even if you think about like superhero movies, they're full of it. Avengers, Infinity War, mm-hmm. the love with the Vision and Wanda, the Scarlet Witch or whatever her name is. It's all filled with love. And my purpose in this life is to get fulfilled through this love. And we are telling no to same-sex attracted people. So this is such a delicate, delicate thing to be talking about with people.
Mm-hmm. And I think... too, I think, you know, if I'm a parent sitting there and you know, whether my kids are, you know, in, you know, not in school yet, whether they're in primary, whether they're in middle school, high school, whatever, there is this sense of looking at your children saying, is my daughter developing into this, you know, this young lady? Is my son developing into this young man? You know, a strong sense of gender identity. And I think that's up to us as parents to make sure that, you know, I mean, you might think, okay, like everything seems to be going. But, you know, just to have an understanding what that means early on. Do they have a strong sense that they are a boy? Do they have a strong sense that they are a girl? And, you know, it's watching them how they play. It's watching them how they interact. But more importantly, it is also understanding the love that mom and dad must have between each other and with their children. It is a given that, and someone once said something like this, that it's much easier to raise an emotionally healthy, strong child than it is to fix a broken adult, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And obviously our churches and our counseling departments and our marriages and you know, the things that are needing constant attention, often that we have to fix that when they're adults. So it does kind of behoove us, you know, in the sense to say, okay, my job as a parent is to underline the importance of this gender understanding and acceptance, you know. And so dads, you need relationships with your sons. Moms, you need relationships with your daughters. And then they crisscross. But it is important that boys understand the importance of dad's love, acceptance, and job well done. And it is like mom's understanding to have a good, solid relational bond with their daughters. Yeah. Those are things that you cannot replace with anything else. And it's proven statistically that when kids rebel or struggle, often they have, what do we hear that? Do you have mommy issues? Do you have daddy issues? You know? And that's an important part. So you have to recognize that you have opportunities to cherish these things and to live on them and breathe the very acceptance. But when mom and dad are totally in love with each other and are working hard to be intentional about understanding what it means to love our kids and to walk with them in this whole understanding of gender.
Yeah. Well, that's all the time we have today. Thank you for joining us. If you have any questions, please email us at btw@northview.org. See you next week.